everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Your Mortgage Process. I'm your host, Greg Wareham. So we're thinking about what we were going to talk about today, and I want to bring you up to speed on a project that I've been working on for the past year. So we're a couple months away from launching a new book, and a new book that really goes deep on mortgage and real estate, and the overall theme of it is how do we help the consumer understand the industries and how to navigate them. Now, if you go online, you Google mortgage or you Google real estate, you're going to get a lot of different answers. And a lot of the answers that you're going to get are textbook answers, which can be really helpful to understand the process. But as I know, and anyone in the mortgage industry or anyone in real estate knows, the textbook answers aren't practical to someone's day in and day out in looking to purchase real estate and looking to do a mortgage. So we're trying in this book to fill that gap or bridge that gap for people. So I want to take some time today to go through some of the things that we'll be talking about. So let's start by taking a look at some basic concepts that you need in order to qualify for a mortgage. And they've been considered the four C's of mortgage lending. They're credit, capacity, collateral, and capital. Now, we've talked about some of these items briefly over the course of time, but I want to do a deeper dive. And I've also seen over time that some people add a fifth C, and that fifth C is character. Now, character's never made any sense to me, because when you're underwriting a mortgage transaction, what does someone's character have to do with it? It just kind of makes you look at it and say, well, hey, I feel this person's going to pay me back, or I feel that they're a good risk. It really doesn't have a lot of bearing in an industry that's more mechanical, and you're checking boxes on it. So although at times an underwriter can make a decision as to how they feel, for the most part, I wouldn't consider it a major part of the overall process in applying for a mortgage and qualifying for a mortgage. So I wanted to talk today specifically about credit. So this is the topic that most people are familiar with, and many of us have credit monitoring that gives us a general idea of where our credit score is currently at. You know, and although these credit monitoring services do help us identify if your credit's being pulled or some sort of nuance on your credit report, it doesn't give you an accurate reflection as to what a true credit score would be. When you're applying for a mortgage, what we do in our industry is we pull a tri-merge, and that means we look at Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And a good rule of thumb is you're going to throw out the high score, throw out the low score, and you're going to qualify on the middle score. Now, there are some situations where you can average the score, so you add the three up, divide by three, and that's the score that you have, but for the most part, you're qualifying based on the middle score. Now, I want to give you an example as to how that works. So let's say I pulled somebody's credit, and the Experian score is a 770, Equifax is a 747, and TransUnion is a 699. In this scenario, we'd use that middle score of a 747 to qualify. Now, if we were to average that score, and you add up Experian of 770, Equifax of 747, and TransUnion of 699, that's 2,216 points divided by 3 gives you a credit score of 738. And that's a really good example as to how averaging the score can give you a lower number than using the middle score. So when you look at the overall credit scoring, the question I get all the time is, how does the credit score impact my ability to qualify? In a lot of cases, how does it just impact my ability to get the best interest rate out there? Now, as we all know, if your credit score is under a certain point, or you're not paying some of your bills on time, you have a repossession, you have a foreclosure, those things can prevent you from obtaining a mortgage in the short term until a certain amount of time has went by. And even though you could have, say, a 700 credit score, if you had a foreclosure 12 months ago, you can't qualify for a conventional conforming mortgage. Now, there are some other mortgages that will allow for that, but the rates are really high. And in addition to that, the costs are really high on it. But what is the best credit score that you can have for a mortgage? Now, prior to last year, the best credit score that you could have for a conventional conforming mortgage was a 740 credit score. So if you had a 740 credit score or you had a 790 credit score, didn't matter. You were still getting the best prevailing interest rate. That changed last year. And that changed when Fannie Mae redid their loan level price adjustment matrix and they reclassified credit. So now the best credit score that you can have is a 780. And from there, it gets broken down into 20-point increments. And as an example, 780 is the best score. Then the next grade down is 760 to 779, 740 to 759, 720 to 739, 700 to 719, all the way down to 620 credit score. Now, the biggest difference in there isn't whether or not you're necessarily going to qualify, it's what the interest rate is going to be. So let me clarify that. There are some situations, if you had a 680 credit score, you may not qualify for a conventional mortgage, depending on what your debt load looks like and depending on what drove your credit score down, where you may have to look at an alternative product like an FHA mortgage. Or in some situations, you may even have to look at what would be considered a non-qualified mortgage. But the bigger impact I see on a day-to-day basis is how it impacts somebody's interest rate. So if you remember last year, there was a lot of news going on around how people with bad credit were going to get better interest rates than people with good credit. And that was never the case. If you have great credit, you're always going to get a better deal. However, there were some changes that went on behind the scenes, which dropped the interest rate for lower credit borrowers if they were first-time homebuyers. So let me clarify that a little bit. So what I'm going to pull out right now is what's called the Loan Level Price Adjustment Matrix for Fannie Mae. And let me break this down to you in a little bit more detail. So if a 780 credit score or higher is the best credit you can have, how does it impact you? Well, let's just say that they have 25% to put down. They have a 780 credit score, and the prevailing interest rate is 7%. With 25% down, there'd be no adjustment to price for that transaction. They would truly get that 7% interest rate. Well, what happens if their credit score falls into the next tier, which is 760 to 779? In that scenario, to be at 7% with 25% down, they would have to pay 0.25 of 1 point. What's that mean? So 0.25 of 1 point on a $400,000 loan is $1,000. So to be at 7%, they'd have to pay $1,000. If your credit's 740 to 759, that $1,000 goes up a little bit. You go from paying 0.25 of a point to 0.375 of a point. And here's an area that was hit relatively hard when these changes were made last year. If you're between 720 and 739, that same 7% interest rate is going to cost you 0.75 of a point. Now, that doesn't mean that the individual buyer has to pay that out of pocket. Frequently, that just gets financed into the loan. And when I say financed into the loan, I mean it gets built into the interest rate. So if the prevailing interest rate for someone with a 780 credit score, putting down 25% today, is 7% with no points. If we had a buyer with a 720 credit score, and they're supposed to pay 0.75 of a point, we may just build that into price. In that scenario, maybe their interest rate is 7.25 paying no points, or the 7% paying 0.75 of a point. So as you get further down into the matrix in that example, you got to have to pay progressively more points. So if your credit score was a 640, you're going to have to pay 1.5 to be at that 7% interest rate, or build it into the interest rate, in which case the rate's going to be a lot higher than 7%. Now, another thing that I do want to point out when it comes to down payment and credit score is how much down payment can influence what your true interest rate's going to be. And let me give you an example. So let's just say for a second you're putting down 40%, so you're borrowing 90% of the value of the property. And the prevailing interest rate, again, is 7%. 7% with 40%, or excuse me, a 780 credit score, with 40% down gives you a 7% interest rate, no points. 750 credit score, it's the same program, 7%, no points. 700 credit score, same program, 7% with no points. Go all the way down to a 650 credit score, you're still gonna be at that same rate of 7% with no points if you're putting down 40%, which if you think about it for a second, it makes sense. The reason rates are higher with lower credit grades is because there's more risk associated with it, right? But if you're putting down 40%, How much risk is there even if your credit grade is lower? You have a lot of skin in the game. And their loan level price adjustment matrix accounts for that. Another thing that I want to point out as it pertains to credit grade and down payment is the impact on a second home or an investment property. And as you may recall from last year, there were some changes made where second home properties used to have the same interest rate as primary residences. And that changed last year, March of last year, where now they're treated exactly as investment properties. So now, operating the presumption that someone has really good credit, called 780 or higher, if you're putting down 20% on an investment property or a second home, to be at that 7% prevailing interest rate, you would have to pay 2.125 points. So again, second home investment property to be at the prevailing 7% interest rate, it would cost you 2.125 points. Now you could pay that out of pocket, or you can build it into your interest rate, in which case that may now give you an interest rate that's significantly higher. You may even be looking at an interest rate in the upper sevens or the low eights. So all of these things have bearing behind the scenes. But as we started this and talking about credit, I really wanted to show you how credit impacts things, and more importantly, that they understand what the new credit brackets are, because they've changed significantly over the course of time. So one of the questions that I ask people, everybody that I talk to, is if you're looking to purchase a home, how much money are you comfortable putting down? Because just because you have $25,000 to put down as a down payment doesn't necessarily mean that you want to put that entire $25,000 down, nor should you necessarily put it all down. I mean, it's good to have financial reserves when you're buying a home, especially when you're a first-time home buyer. So you don't necessarily want to throw all your money into the transaction. I'll give you a real-life example. When Rachel and I were purchasing our first home, and we had purchased our first home in 2000, we scraped together all the money that we possibly could to buy our first house with 3.5% down FHA home. We didn't have any money after we closed on the transaction, and within a month, the oil burner went on the house, and we had to replace it. It's a $5,000 cost. We don't have any money. You have to put it on a credit card. And then there's also things that you want to do to the house to make it your own house. That's more debt on the credit card. So next thing you know, you have $10,000 worth of debt because you put all your money into the transaction. And unless you got family that can help you out at that situation, you're going to be caught paying it. It's going to take you some time to pay that money back. So you really need to think about whether or not you want to put that whole amount of money down. Now, I bring that up, and as it pertains to credit, is if you have really good credit, the difference between you putting down 5% versus 10% shouldn't be that significant of a difference to your minimum monthly payment. So you look at there's a difference there with the cost of PMI on a monthly basis, and there can be a slight difference to interest rate. But it may not be overwhelming when you look at the security that you'll have for having that money in the bank after you close. Now, as this real estate landscape starts to change over the course of this year, I'm thinking that it's going to be good for the consumer to have more money to work with when they're looking to purchase a home. And I really want to illustrate the difference between putting 5 or 10% down or putting down 8% versus 10%. It may not have a nominal impact on the consumer's minimum monthly payment. So what I would encourage everybody, if you have any questions or your customer has any questions about what different payment scenarios look like depending on the down payment, have them reach out to me right away. I can explain it in terms that they'll understand, and also I can articulate in a fashion that's economic, right? So I can really show what that monthly cost is going to be if they put down 8% as compared to 10%. So a conversation I have pretty frequently with people looking to purchase a home is interest rate. Clearly, that's a big part of the transaction. And a lot of people have the perception that the difference of 0.25% or a full percentage point reduction in interest rate is going to have major impact to their overall monthly payment. Now, that can be true at times. It depends on how much money that you're borrowing. But I wanted to illustrate it for you for a moment. So let's say that someone's borrowing $500,000. In $500,000 at 7%, Your monthly principal and interest payment is $33.26 per month. Well, what does that look like at 6.5%? It's $33.26 per month at 7, and it's $31.60 at 6.5. So let's take the difference between those two numbers. $33.26. The difference between those two numbers are $165 a month. I mean, think about that for a second. So if someone's waiting for interest rates to drop, and they drop by 0.5%, it's going to change their monthly payment on a $500,000 loan by $165 a month. Now, I'm not trying to minimize $165 a month, but it's not $1,000. They're not huge differences in that scenario. Let's take a look at it and what it looks like in a full percentage point drop. So at 6%, your monthly payment goes to about $3,000 a month. And like I said, at 7%, it was $33.26. So that's going to save somebody about $330 per month. Difference between 7% and 6% on a $500,000 mortgage is a difference of payment of about $330 a month. It's a healthy difference in payment. It could potentially even be part or someone's full car payment. But it's not thousands, is my point. And a lot of people think that differences in interest rates like that are going to have a significant impact to their monthly payment. In the reality, that's just not true. So if you're looking to purchase a home today and you're going to buy a house and your payment's $33.26 per month, principal and interest, okay, you can always refinance if interest rates drop a full percentage point, but it shouldn't be the difference between whether or not you're going to buy the house or not buy the house, in my opinion. Now, relating that back to credit, credit is the only thing that we can really control as a consumer in the marketplace. We can't control what the markets are going to do. We can't control the 10-year Treasury bond yield. We can't control the mortgage-backed securities market. You can't control inflation. You can't control the jobs report. Like, you can't control any of this stuff. None of us can. No one's picking up the phone and calling the Federal Reserve and saying, hey, I think rates need to come down. They don't care. They don't care about what we think. They care about what the economy's saying as a whole. So as a consumer, controlling your credit score is the most important thing that you can do, coupled with down payment. So in the perfect world, you want to be able to maximize your credit score to keep that payment down. And you want to be able to put the most amount of money down to optimize that interest rate. But again, if you have a 700 credit score and your interest rate's 0.25% higher than a 780 credit score, and you're taking out a $500,000 loan, I don't know that you're going to necessarily determine whether or not you want to purchase a house based on a difference in payment that's under $100 per month. So it's just food for thought. I'd love to go deeper on some of the other 4Cs we were talking about. We talked a little bit about credit today. We can get into more detail, or if you have any questions, just reach out to me directly. We could talk about scoring algorithms as it comes to credit and the different types of reports that I can run for the consumer to show them how to get their credit score up in the shortest amount of time possible. We appreciate you listening today, and we look forward to catching up with you next week. Bye, guys. Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Your Mortgage Process, hosted by Greg Wareham. Produced by Greg Wareham and Nick Pavese at The Social Rift, and executively produced by The Social Rift. Thank you again for tuning in, and we look forward to catching up with you next week.